lack of quietness, I think, like stillness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have so much static around us that adding a little ripple in, a little pebble to try and augment things, I think usually is like, it just gets consumed by the by the tidal wave of your previous momentum.
Welcome to the Earn Your Happy podcast. I'm Lori Harder, founder of The Bliss Project, three-time fitness world champion, fitness expert, and cover model turned self-love junkie, lifestyle entrepreneur, and author. Each week, I'll bring you a guest or a thought that will help you bust through your fears, connect to your soul, and get focused and clear so you can elevate your life, business, and relationships. We don't wait until we're ready for someone to tell us we're good enough. We take what we want and we anoint ourselves. Get ready to earn, own, and unapologetically rock your happiness every single day. Are you with me? Here we go. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into another episode. I'm really excited about today's guest, because this is someone who I've wanted to connect with for a while now, and it's someone who has actually been in my circle of friends for quite some time. I met him a while back, but have not actually gotten to sit down and really talk, and I will tell you that I learned so many new things today, and I know that you are going to learn so many awesome things, and I just love this human because whenever I can just go down the rabbit holes of life and really talk about anything that comes up, right? Nothing was off limits. Nothing is weird. Nothing is judged. It's all just a beautiful conversation about life. That's exactly who this human is. So I'm so excited to introduce you to Aaron Alexander. He is an accomplished manual therapist and movement coach with over 13 years of professional experience. He's the founder of Align Therapy, an integrated approach to functional movement and self-care that has helped thousands of people out of pain and into health. He hosts the top-rated Align podcast featuring the biggest names in movement and wellness. Aaron's clients include Hollywood celebrities, Olympic professional athletes, and everyone in between. He teaches worldwide and he resides in Venice. So he lives pretty much right down the street from me. And also, you guys, when he came in, so he came into my home, which is where my podcast studio is, and we did a one-on-one in-person podcast, and I was having a bit of a shoulder issue, and I can honestly tell you that he probably alleviated about 70% of the pain that I had in my shoulder in one session. So I not only got an amazing podcast, but I also got part of my shoulder and bicep fixed. So this was like a really amazing day for me. So I hope that you guys not only enjoy the conversation, but also if you're really curious about exactly what he does, I hope that you go check him out. So let's get started. Aaron, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. How are you?
I'm really well. How are you?
We're laughing because I really just surprised him with hitting record in the middle of, we were about to do laugh therapy.
That's exactly how I do my podcast. So it's perfectly convenient.
You surprise attack people?
Sometimes.
You're like, I'm going to put that out.
Yeah. Into the My world. Last person was Emily Rosen. She does a thing. Do you know Emily Rosen?
I know that name.
She, the psychiatry of eating. She's in Boulder, Colorado.
Okay.
And she confirmed that I'm not into consent culture because I didn't let her know that we were recording. Oh. And she was like, the stuff she was saying was gold. Anyways, continue.
I've definitely done that. I'm like, well, I don't even think they'll listen to this podcast. They said it. Yeah. Okay.
Here we go.
Hi, you're in person.
It's the real thing.
I know. It's really exciting. Mm. So I'm so excited to have you here because I've been seeing all your stuff online. And I think that we share just about every single mutual friend possible. Mm. And I haven't really gotten to drop in with you. But I would love for people, because I really want to know, you have like this super diverse realm of everything that you do and what you're interested in. Mm. Like it's almost so much that I don't even know where to start.
Mm.
But I would love for you to share for people who don't kind of know how you got into what you're doing now and why and what exactly is that? Because you're probably one of the most interesting people that I know.
The Dos Equis man of self-care products. So similar background, I think, of like starting off, we were talking a little bit before. Starting off, had kind of like, for whatever reasons, home reasons, whatever, I got really obsessed with bodybuilding from a young age and started packing on muscle as a means of like protecting, you know, my biological home, and then got really imbalanced from that. And then parts started blowing up. I started dislocating joints and, you know, injuries got worse at sports. My body just...
How old were you? Were you young when that started?
Like age 14 is where I got really into bodybuilding. And then parts started exploding when I was like 17.
Oh,
exploding meaning like, like a lot of shoulder dislocations, ankle dislocations, just like literally the parts like coming off my body.
Wow.
You know, which I think all now I'm like, oh, it's all metaphors.
Yeah.
You know, like the parts start coming off. And then thankfully I ended up moving to Hawaii and kind of like meeting people that were into different things, you know, more like Chinese medicine and like surfing and jujitsu and kind of learning more about like human movement.
Were you always open to that? Was that something that you were, or was it weird at first, or were you like...
Yeah, I was fairly open. I discovered, do you like swear and talk about like taboo subjects and things like that?
Yes.
Yeah. So good.
Really?
So I discovered like psychedelics and things like that at like a kind of like a strange young age.
Yeah.
Like 13, 14 years old or so. And so I think that that kind of augmented perspective on things, you know, from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, fairly open, but also super closed and protected and just guarded was the big thing.
And that came from your home life.
I think so. Yeah. It's all stories, you know, you don't really know. And then you repeat the story over and over again. You're like, is that just the story that I'm putting on top of it? Or is it, you know, at some point you got to just
We were talking about this earlier.
Yeah, yes. At some point you just got to like let go of the whole thing. And so that's what you're saying. It's like words can be really confusing because they have a pre-definition. Mm. You know, we have this conception of what each word is. It's a box. You know, so if you can kind of step outside of that and just things like dance and human contact and, you know, body work like we're doing and just like, you know, singing and all those other expressions that are kind of a little bit more true. That's kind of the stuff I started to explore when I moved to Hawaii.
Mm. Okay. So we just did like kind of a mini session.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you call what we just did?
We just worked with unwinding some of the tissue around your diaphragm and your rib cage and started getting into starting to like, you could say like downregulate or like calming your autonomic nervous system through physical contact. You know, so many of us, similar thing, like we do like the talk therapies and all this stuff. We could try to talk our way out of these physiological
such a pro at that.
Issues. Yeah, me too. Yeah. And so essentially what we're doing is just going through and through my contact, like slow, deep pressure, having you start to access parts of your own physiology that, you know, I describe it as like shining a flashlight on parts that sometimes we have contraction and tension in parts of our body. And we just keep on marching through life and kind of slamming through and having a moment of someone to say, hey, did you realize this has been bracing for the last 20 years? You know, so that's what I do on a one-on-one like manual therapy way. Is kind of just go through and shine a flashlight on parts of people's body that they've been bracing and they don't realize. And those braces, that contraction will cause your nervous system to be, you know, I describe it as like running at higher RPMs than what is actually healing for your body. You know, so as we go through and find those places that are bracing, that contraction, it allows the whole global nervous system to start to calm down and go into more of like a rest, digest, heal place. So meditation is a powerful tool for that as well.
I love meditation.
It's just important.
Yeah, it's just doing it.
Right. The idea of meditation is awesome.
You know what? I heard it rock. So going back to just when you started exploring things and you became really open to things, are you were you like a really fast trial and error person where you're like, oh, liked it, didn't like it, didn't work. Oh, I noticed this about me. Or what were some things right away that you started doing that you, I think what I'm saying is through the physical work that you do, what was opening up for you? Like, what were you starting to see mentally? Like, what was changing for you?
The big thing is shame.
Yeah.
So shame... shame is literally weight in the body, you know? So any place in your body that you're insecure about, you know, it's an interesting thing. Like if you go to like Papua New Guinea, you know, or something, there's a guy called Ted Decker. He grew up in Papua New Guinea. He's like the Stephen King of like religious novels or something like that. He's a very interesting guy. But he was telling me about he grew up with cannibals in Papua New Guinea.
Oh my gosh.
Like, you're the most interesting person.
Wow.
I know. This is amazing. Ted Decker, check him out. And so, but with that, they grow up and they have like these little, like some kind of like shell something thing over their junk, their genitals.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, they're actually way more okay with like exposing their cock. You know, it's like a normal part of their culture.
Yeah.
we in our culture, not that it's just about the cock, but we in our culture, we have these parts of our body that are okay.
Yeah.
And then we have these other parts where it's like, oh no. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's, again, that's like a metaphor for maybe parts of like your emotional self or parts of just any part of you that you're not okay with being seen mm-hmm. with, it kind of creates these walls around it. It's that bracing, you know, and then mm-hmm. with that bracing, it's contraction. For there to be contraction in the body, your body needs to expend energy to maintain that contraction. Mm. You know, and so I think it was really valuable just to like go to school. I went to school for Rolfing and massage therapy and different forms of like hands-on therapy mm-hmm. and just being like touched everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just kind of like it's okay to be taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sometimes it's like we feel uncomfortable taking up space almost. At least that's the way I felt.
Oh, for sure. I even noticed there's so many people who have trouble just even hugging.
Yeah.
Like being held for longer than like a, hey.
Right.
Like a pat on the back.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not completely autonomous. I can take care of myself. So it's like, dude, the strongest thing is for you to be able to actually reach out and say, I need help.
Yeah.
But that's it can be a practice for people.
I think you can worry that if people see that part of you, they can think that you're weird or that you're different or that there's something wrong with you or whatever that is. So we tend to like avoid those different things. Or maybe if you haven't yet been able to explore it or put words to it, you're worried like, what is this? Like what's going to come up? Like sometimes right. maybe we don't want to see it or we don't want to know it. Or we're like, did any of that happen for you when you were exploring like letting go? Or were you just all about wanting to just feel free? Or what really—
I'm still dealing with stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when I see you, I just like, I literally think of you as like, he must be so free. Like that must feel, because all of the work that you do and all the things you do, is it because you're seeking freedom? I mean, aren't we all?
Yeah. I mean, if you're seeking freedom, then inherently it means that you're not free.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, if you would see me and perceive me that way, you know, there's a good chance that A, I either came from a place that was like totally unfree, or B, I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm writing a book about freedom, like we were talking about, like if you're like the expert on the thing, it's like, oh, this is because this is the thing you've struggled with throughout your life. Yeah. Now I'm amazing. The expert yeah. on it.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, he's so free. I mean, his Instagram, he doesn't even hardly wear clothing. Like, I mean, if he could wear a shell, he'd just be in a shell. So yeah. I mean, that's amazing though. So what's something right now that is feeling restrictive at all in your life?
Vulnerability.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's the big thing that I'm noticing. So I have more resources in my world than I've ever had before, which is really mm-hmm. great. Just in every sense, not just like financially, but just like all the realms, like my home is safe and my work is safe and I have this great book deal thing happening and mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff happening right now.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing with that is it's because those resources feel more full, it feels as though, and that could be a story as well, but it feels as though I'm almost like there's this other underlying baggage that's now it's coming to the surface. You know, it's almost like sometimes if you feel completely safe or you mm-hmm. feel like you're, okay, oh, we finally made it home from a long trip,
yeah.
then you get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And your body's like, okay, well now we can address this other backlog yeah. of shit.
Yeah.
And so the backlog that I've noticed is, I mean, this is probably like excessively like going deep into whatever, but like,
oh, I love this.
Perfect. like a sense of abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened my dad got into like smoking crack and he was like selling, he was pimping women. Mm. Super interesting.
I hear they go hand in hand though.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They pair well together.
You know?
Yeah. But so I had never really addressed it throughout my life. And now recently, I was actually talking with Neil Strauss in a podcast and he like dissected me,
yeah,
which was really great.
Yeah. And it's recorded if you want to hear it. So.
Yeah, exactly. So he like put me on the chopping block and realized that I never really felt into that moment of like, I'm not, as a kid, you can't not feel like, wow, you're doing all this stuff. You're abandoning the family or whatever, you know, you're leaving me.
Right.
You know, and so what I conceive from that is it kind of put me into this place of like, okay, you know, I have a fear of abandonment. So I would end up protecting myself. So I became super good at creating rapport really fast and connecting with like we can connect really quick. Mm-hmm. But then there was a layer where I would stop. Mm. And now I find it really fascinating and intriguing to like tell people how I feel. You know, if I'm like attracted to a person or I'm like, mm-hmm. I think I have feelings for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, so you can you can do with that what you wish. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas for the longest time, I would just shut it down and just live like a very lonely life.
Mm. Yeah.
Now I'm like, screw that noise.
Oh yeah, I did that for a lot. I did that for a long time too. I think that it's a safety thing. Like, well, if I don't share how I feel, then I can't be rejected, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. I like that.
And you can be in a relationship with somebody mm-hmm. and still be lonely.
Oh, for sure.
You can have a million friends, you have $1 million, you can have all that stuff, but you still have this core of loneliness because you haven't actually shown anybody like your true self. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden people are attracted to this superficial layer of you. Mm-hmm. And now that's like, oh, cool, sweet. They applaud that. So now that creates this feedback. So now, okay, now I have to be there because if they saw the real me, they wouldn't actually love me. Mm-hmm. And so the sooner that you can like, I have a friend, she's going through this thing like how to find an alpha male. Or something. She's a friend that you know, but I'm not going to mention.
I think I know who it is.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's what she's telling me about. And she's like, just all these like tricks and you got to like, don't call, text it back for 16 hours and like all this stuff. I'm just like, okay, great. That's cool. It's effective. Like it'll create like this sense of scarcity around you, right. Which will make them want you more probably. And you're also playing this like topical layer that now the person becomes attracted to that. So mm-hmm. at some point you have to spill the news that that's not you.
At some point you have to be like, look, I'm real needy.
Yeah. So like how long, like the sooner that you can just be like, here it is.
So is this locked and loaded or what? Because I got to show you the real me. It's true.
So it's like this really great filtration mechanism that we all naturally have. If you're just yourself, you'll attract people that are actually resonate with you. Mm-hmm. But most of us, we fear that because if you actually express yourself and someone doesn't like that, it means they don't like the real you. Mm-hmm. That's way more painful than they don't like the superficial bullshit version that you show.
Oh man, I had a moment of this where it's not like sometimes we're even intentionally creating like a facade around who you are. But I had a moment the other day because I've been in this mode of just like not wanting to do anything lately, like really. Like I've been wanting to just like deeply chill, cool. Like knit blankets type of chill.
It's winter.
But it's true. Like definitely I've just been like wanting to not output a lot of energy at all, even in like talking or relationships, like nothing. Yeah. So outside of like my podcast, which still feels good and things like that. But outside of that, I've been like, okay, let's do a couple hours of work a day and then chill. That's just where I'm at. But I had this moment where I was like, who can I call that I can just not do anything with or talk to or just be or be like so goofy or moronic and weird? And my list was super small. And it's not because right. they wouldn't accept that in me. It's because I felt like I had an expectation to need to be like create a space for them or do something interesting. And I can see myself doing that, like needing to be someone for the relationships that I've created. Yep. Yet I don't.
Yeah.
But that's what I observed.
Yeah, it's like the caretaker archetype, which I don't think is actually like one of Joe Campbell's like archetypes. It might be. It sounds like it would be.
Let's a good make one. It up.
Yeah, whatever. You know, so me, like I pursued a path of educating people on how to, you know, take care of themselves, mm-hmm. self-care and manual therapy and movement coaching and all that. Yeah. Like it's like my purpose here is to help you feel well.
Right.
You know, but that's also a topical layer. It's like, mm-hmm. you love me because I empower you.
You fixed my arm. So you can only ever fix
love
my...
Love me, Laurie.
You can only ever fix me when you see me now. Like you can't just be. I'm just kidding.
No, that's a real thing. And so it's easy. So culturally, like we applaud people that have a lot of money. We applaud people that are able to fix my arm. We applaud people that are able to like do the thing.
Yeah.
But even still, there's like this kind of cap on that, where it's like you can feel like I'm obligated to show up in this way and support you, mm-hmm. but it's like the shoemaker with no shoes mm-hmm. kind of thing. It's like for that person, so many people, and I know because I get to work with them, that are like these leading authorities on helping empower people and all that stuff. They don't actually know how to take care of themselves. Mm. Like they've mm-hmm. they've drilled in so good at taking care of everybody else. Mm. But then when you really get into a lot of their stuff, they're like, oh, I never have really actually allowed anybody in to like take care of me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's like a deep practice.
Oh my God.
I'm like sorting that shit out.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted. So these are my favorite things, is to talk about what's in the moment right now for you, because you do have some really awesome stuff that I know you've kind of been like working on and manifesting in your life. That's like feeling really great for you right now. Yeah. So what you were saying is that was kind of, and maybe I'm translating it wrong or maybe not, but what is it? Is that revealing on the other side? Some of the other stuff is that you were saying that you're kind of dealing with, or that you want to work through when things.
No, it's just creating it's almost like a lattice or like a scaffolding, you know, as you're building a building, you build the scaffolding up and mm-hmm. then you can raise taller, mm-hmm. you know? So I think that to me, some of these maybe like superficial indicators, even, you know, like health and like home. So it's like Maslow's hierarchy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You figure out your base level needs.
Yep.
And then from there, the very top of the pyramid is self-actualization. But first you need to figure out, like, you got to get your car registered and you got to, mm-hmm. you know, get good food in the fridge and you got to have a good support group. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it just feels as though I have been filling in some of those lower portions of the pyramid. And I think for the first time, literally in my life, I'm starting to see what I conceive as being like self-actualization. Mm. Whereas for the longest time, it was just treading upstream. Mm. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had this like visual sensation of like every day it felt as though I was like pushing a rock up a hill.
You just said that today.
Yep. And then I go to sleep and the rock like rolls back and there was a little bit of progress, mm-hmm. you know, like roll, it catches a divot and like, oh, cool, sweet. I moved it like a foot. I spent the whole day moving it, you know, mm-hmm. 300 feet and then it moved back to like a foot. Okay, it's something. And whatever the switch has been, it feels as though it's like, okay, it seems like when I go to sleep, the rock still moves, mm-hmm. you know, and there's still a bunch of crap that we'll be working on, but mm-hmm. it's been a long journey.
Let's talk about the boulder for 1 minute because we've all got the boulder. Like everybody yeah. literally was probably just like, yes, we all have the boulder.
Right.
So there's so much talk now about like flow and, you know, don't make it so hard and we're making it so much harder, but don't you think it like we actually have to go through that to like find the foundation of what that even means to us, like flow or following the energy of what actually works for us, or do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like when you look back at anything, everything makes sense, mm-hmm. you know? So it's being, I don't know, wise enough or something to realize just look at the pattern. Mm-hmm. You know, if I look mm-hmm. back any time in history, I'm like, oh, it all makes sense.
Yes.
But meanwhile, present, you're like, oh, it's terrible.
This makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
This shouldn't be happening to me.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think to me, like that provides a lot of satisfaction, you know, or gratification or safety or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, like from the patterns, from history, everything I look back on, all those terrible situations have formed me to where I'm at now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's kind of like a hormetic stressor. Like you go into the gym, you work out, it might feel painful at the time, but then you're able to grow from that. Mm-hmm. But that's all stuff that people understand, I think. You know, mm-hmm. but I think that's the thing, is just looking at my history and seeing like everything, all the hard stuff has really been the most valuable things. Mm. So if I'm able to kind of like ameliorate that moment of wigging out, because, you know, so far it's worked out. So I that's kind of like an anchor for me, mm-hmm. you know, because since they like pain's funny, like yeah. what the hell is pain?
Yeah. What is it? What do you think it is?
I mean, it could be like the sensation of resistance to what is, mm. you know, whatever the thing is. If I feel like I need to get away from it, then our body will clamp down and contract, you know, and you could describe it from like more of like a scientific kind of way and say it's like the tissue is contracting around the sensory nerve endings, which is mm-hmm. creating the stimulus up to your brain to say there's an emergency. Mm-hmm. You could say it's like an emotional thing. You could go to a Vipassana and say it's a samskara, which is like, that's that resistance okay. inside of you. Mm-hmm. You know, and so have you ever done any like extended meditations?
I have. I don't know the names of them, but I've okay. done like, yeah.
So I recently did a Vipassana where it's like a 10 day, you just sit
oh, not that. No, no, no.
The whole
no,
time.
Haven't done that.
Yeah. So you get up at 4:30 in the morning, you just sit there all day.
Yes.
That's all you do.
Yeah.
And you eat and you don't stare, you don't look at each other. It's all called noble silence.
Yeah.
And what they teach in that is that when you are having any type of sensation of pain, it's just some resistance in your nervous system and you're like a deep emotional body coming up and saying, run.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yep.
You know, and so when you sit, if you can actually sit through that, what I found, I mean, there's some crazy shit, which totally changes my whole perception of like what pain is.
Yeah.
Literally felt, I'm like borderline crazy person, but I'm like fairly, I'm not completely like out there, patch pants, dreadlock.
Well, I feel like person. As long as you're aware of it, it's not super crazy.
Okay. But what I'm saying is what I'm about to say is like, as I was in there, I could feel there was moments where it literally felt like this pain sensation, like hot, fiery, searing pain. Mm. It would like move because I sat with it for 25 minutes or something like that. I'm just like, oh, wow. Like legs gonna, I feel I'm hurting myself. And then all of a sudden the pain, as though it was like a tangible orb.
Yeah.
It went, it moved and it goes like out of my hip and then like up my spine and then over into my shoulder.
Wow.
And it was like, it was as though this thing in my body, this sensation of like retreat or whatever, it's like, it's trying to work its way out and it was in the hip and I call it, you know, hip pain or whatever.
Yeah.
And then if I sat with it long enough, it felt like, okay, cool. It's starting to move, but it wants to go.
Right.
But we just need to give it the spaciousness to go. But most of us, our environment forms us into a position that's collapsed and contracted. You know, so when we're sitting in hunched over positions in chairs, for example, this gets into more things that I actually like have some sense of like researching and getting into. When we're hunched over in those chairs, that literally is all tied into our physiology. Mm. So if you're hunched over like this position, you're looking into your phone. If you were to look somebody in that position and you didn't realize they were looking at their phone, you'd think they were sad. Mm. You know, and so your physiology is all tied into that. So there's studies done in Harvard, amongst other places, where they did saliva samples with people. Just after 2 minutes of being hunched over into that position, just standard, typical, looking at my phone.
Yeah.
Or driving in my car, or sitting in the plane. Literally, your stress hormones end up increasing. So cortisol is one they measured. And then testosterone levels decrease, which is good, like cognitive function and making you feel like alive, strong. Mm-hmm. And then the inverse happens when you go into that upright position. Mm-hmm. But the mold that we live in literally forms us into a collapsed, depressed position. Mm. And so we're literally, like I use the analogy of like, it felt like I was like, kind of like going up river. Mm-hmm. We're literally going up river in the environment that we live in. Mm. So we need to be smart enough to start to kind of go in and say, okay, the mold, the modern mold, obviously it appears as though people are getting fatter, they're getting sicker, they're getting, you know, they're United States uses more anti-anxiety and antidepressants than like anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. So like something is happening that we're going in this direction. Seems like it's almost like we're being pressed into it, like the mold's shifting us. So we need to be smart enough to start to rewire the way that we inhabit the mold. And that creates spaciousness in the body, which creates spaciousness in the mind because we're always communicating via body language. Mm, they say 55% of our communication is body language.
Oh, I for sure feel that. Especially, I think once you're aware of it too, and when you meet people, like I can, it's almost like, and it's not a bad thing, but sometimes it's challenging because when you meet people like right away, if they're super closed off, I'm like, I'm not even gonna go over there.
Because
it just, and it's probably literally my body saying, don't go over there because they're super closed off because you can see it, you know, it's just like either crossed arms or they're hunched over or they don't look confident and then it's funny. You can kind of watch rooms like the same people. We find our level of confidence even like, cause you can read the body language. Mm-hmm. So interesting.
Yeah. So if you can start to take control of what are these signals? So the specific there's a guy called Albert Mehrabian. I think he was in Harvard as well. It was like in the 60s. Did a thing where he determined that 55% of our communication was via body language. This doesn't need to be exactly accurate, but this is what they came up with. 38% was via tonality. Mm. Right. So if all of a sudden I start talking higher and I get a little bit faster, you're like, whatever he's saying, I'm not into it.
Right.
You know, like he doesn't trust himself. He doesn't feel confident. He doesn't believe himself. So I'm not going to believe it.
Right.
Right. And then he said 7% was the actual words, you know, that we're saying to each other.
Totally.
But if all of a sudden my hips shift towards the door right now as we're talking, or I kind of like say something, but I nod my head, you know, or I collapse my shoulders, like, or I cross my arms, that's what you're actually listening to. But we never get any education around that. Right. We're learning like arithmetic and we're learning, you know, whatever grammar, but we don't actually get any education of like, grammar aside, you're communicating with your body. You know, so if you can start to create a little bit of awareness of that, you just without a doubt become a better communicator.
Mm.
But then if you can shift your environment, that your environment actually forms you into a better communicator. Because as you're driving in the car, you maybe say you put like a water bottle or something like a pillow behind your spine. So mm-hmm. you're more upright as you're driving. You know, as you're at your house, you spend more time on the floor. So now you're mobilizing your hips and you're opening up the hamstrings and you're mm-hmm. practicing getting all the way down and up, which protects you from fall risk. That's mm-hmm. the number one leading cause of elderly needing to go to assisted yes. living. Because mm-hmm. we just literally, this position, so right now I'm sitting on the chair as though I'm on the floor.
Yep.
Right? But that position, that bottom like 3.5-4 feet range of motion is gone.
Yeah.
Like modern culture, we don't do that.
Yeah, like
don't
it's not
it.
Even like after like just, 45, it's like not expected.
We just
like,
don't do that.
Do that.
Yeah.
You'll get hurt.
You'll blow out your yeah. knee.
Yeah, don't bend over. Yeah. Okay, so it's so true though. It really is.
And then then you lose it. So it creates a gap. Yeah. Every day that you step away from that thing,
yeah.
it's like an old friend.
Yeah.
You know?
That's how we went to the bathroom, right? Like that's how you
stay.
Still
how we
mobile.
Go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. The rectum actually. There's a muscle call. No need to get into this, but
we're talking about rectums today on the Earn Your Happy podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's literally a muscle that actually wraps around the front of the rectum. And as you are standing, it kind of puts tension on that.
Mm.
And so as you come down, it releases that muscle and allows the rectum to actually elongate so you can defecate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it's called the puborectal angle. Something like that.
I don't know how you know that.
But it's... and so as you go into a squat position, mm-hmm. you're literally starting to elongate, and finally open up your rectum to allow poo come out.
That's why yoga can be a scary place if you have a stomachache.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. No, it's a big deal. But all these systems, this is what we evolved from.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. this is what makes us
human.
And
we remove them and then we wonder why we're like... Whoa.
And then we wonder why we're sick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as you're going through that range of motion, like it's the foundation of your humanity,
mm-hmm.
right? Like our brains, there's a sea squirts. They, when they are whatever you call a baby sea squirt. I don't know.
I really don't know what you're talking about right now, but I'm excited to learn.
Yeah, this is interesting. So sea squirts, when they're baby sea squirts, they have really similar nervous systems to us. And they have the brain and they got the spinal cord and the whole thing.
A baby sea squirt?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's just like a little sea creature cruising around.
You're not talking about the sea, like a seahorse.
Nope.
It's like,
look it up. Sea squirt. This is legit.
I will look it up after
this.
This
is science. So the sea squirt. So it cruises around. And so it has a brain. It has a nervous system, just like human beings. It's actually like really similar to human beings in a strange way. And then, so it's cruising around. It finally finds a place to eventually to attach to. And then once it attaches, it stops moving. Once it stops moving, it literally digests its own brain because it doesn't need it as much anymore because it's not moving anymore.
Oh.
So the brain's a really expensive organ to operate. I forget what percent of our calories it takes, but it's like a lot, like a high percentage. Our brain is, but it's to move our bodies.
Yeah. Does that happen to us?
I mean, I don't know, but I think so.
We don't eat our brains, but do they get like, do we lose some of our stuff, don't you think, if we don't move?
Like walking is huge on consolidating memories.
Yeah.
It's huge on creativity. Most of like most creative people in history, they're like, yeah, take a walk and
Absolutely.
Have my little journal, write my ideas out.
I'm
sure you're
walk.
The same.
I walk we walk 3 or 6 miles a day because we just walk. Like I'm a walker.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Because it's brain, it's so affected. Like my brain is so connected to, we are. Like it's me, just me. Mm. It's everyone.
No, it's everybody. Yeah. If you're a human, it's going to be beneficial for you. And as you're doing that, like again, getting back to like the evolutionary part, that's massaging your organs, right? It's
mm-hmm.
assisting in peristalsis and like that undulation of your intestines to move food through your system.
Mm-hmm.
Walking does that,
mm-hmm.
right? It's opening up your hips. It's activating your glutes. It's stimulating that, activating that pelvic floor. It's integrating the hemispheres of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like all that. If you take that away, the body gets sick.
Totally.
You know, and our world, what we've done is we've done just this beautiful job of making things easier, you know, mm-hmm. more efficient. So we flatten everything out. So now I don't need to move around on contours. I don't need to take my ankles through range of motion. I don't have to really like work. I just kind of like stumble along and I get to where I need to be at.
And we wear Skechers on sidewalks.
And we're Skechers on sidewalks or high heels or what have you.
Right.
You know, and so we've done such a great job of making things easy, mm-hmm. then now we've actually made things a lot harder. Mm. And now we need to figure out a way to add on this supplement of movement. So now I get a gym membership and I get a, you know, Taibo, whatever, you know, I get the DVD thing and I'm in my flat house inside the walls with artificial lights, like kicking the air, trying to replicate yes. what I would just naturally do if I take my goddamn shoes off and go for a walk in some grass.
I'm in a fight with a tiger right now.
Getting all worked up. Sorry.
So how do you feel about that with the beliefs? Like, how do you, because I feel like the... So for the work that you do, you have to work with somewhat open people because you get in there. Yep. So how do you work with the beliefs around, man, what people have come to believe in the world?
Because so I only get in there as much as someone wants to entertain. You know, so that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. So like, you're familiar with like neuro-linguistic programming and all that's like Tony Robbins stuff. You know, so as we're communicating with each other, we want to, you know, you want to kind of like, you can like model each other or start off like almost like mirroring each other,
yeah.
you know? And from that, if I'm like way too like, okay, I'm like super animated movement guy. You're like, okay, I hate that guy. he's that guy. Way too different. You know, he's a threat to the tribe.
Yes, exactly. Cannot be trusted.
Yeah, cannot be trusted. He's different. So starting off, just meeting people exactly where they're at, which that's like, oof, that's huge. There could be a whole book on that.
Oh my God. That could be a whole, I'm like, we could just take the podcast there for the rest of the time.
Yeah. Meeting people mm-hmm. completely where they're at, meeting people without any judgment. Cause I have so much bullshit myself.
Mm.
So for me to pass judgment on anybody else, I'm just like, all right, well now I'm an asshole. Like there's until you're flawlessly immaculate, which is never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's nonsense to pass judgment on anybody else. Mm-hmm. There's a quote from somebody who said, be kind to everyone for they're fighting a great battle inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh yeah.
Definitely. Oh yeah.
That's definitely me. Oh,
yeah. That's been really like, that's been huge for, well, it's been huge for Chris and I lately. Like just whenever it comes up, because it's not, judgment is actually like your own, it creates your own really fast way into a personal prison. Like I'm never happy when I'm judging someone.
You're judging yourself.
And I'm, yeah, exactly. And it's like literally, I feel it in my life and it, every time I judge someone, I find it makes me shrink because I'm like, oh, you're subconsciously like other people will be judging me.
Yeah. Judging is great though, because when you judge, you can see, it's almost like a yoga teacher once said, never waste a trigger. And I was like, oh, like usually I don't get a lot from the yoga, you know, when they go to like the spiritual rants.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that was legit.
That is really, okay.
So when you have a trigger.
Go there. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you have a trigger, mm-hmm. there's something, if it's truly a trigger, if it's truly something that's like, oh, it makes me angry.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, great. Well, then this is actually deeply embedded inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
If something is neutral and someone says, oh, I think you're fat. Like if you call me fat, I'd be like, I don't care. There's no charge there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but if you called me, I don't know. I don't want to lay my weaknesses down on the table.
I'll let you slowly divulge.
But call me a thing that I'm actually, it's like, I don't. Whatever. But then I'm like, oh, that stirs you up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there it's like, okay, most of us, what we prefer to do is we'd say, okay, cover that up. More bench press, more push-ups, more green juice, more money, more power,
right.
More superficial relationships, mm-hmm. more house, more I need a fancier car. I need to wash the car. I need to get rid of these clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we can say, oh, what if I just sat with that?
Mm.
You know, Byron Katie, she mentioned a thing about, she said, if you have a question, sit in silence and wait for the answer.
Mm.
And that's like, we're just never taught that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're like active go-getter. If you're not a go-getter, you're a lazy piece of trash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we miss out on that whole thing of like, what about just like stillness?
Mm-hmm.
It's really important. I'm like, that to me might be, that's like a big work for me.
Yeah. Oh, it's bringing me back to your talking about your meditation and just that's what I was going to ask you about, like the pain you felt. What came from it? Do you know what it was? Did it tell you what it was? Was
which
it
pain?
In the meditation when you felt the pain, like the fire.
Yeah. I don't know.
Did you get
I know.
Answers around I know. It at all?
I didn't. I know at the end, I was like crying in the desert. It was pretty cool.
Mm.
I was like,
yeah.
I think it just started. And then afterwards, I felt almost like a little crazy for a little while after that. Like you get off of like the teat, you know, like a technological Instagram.
It's 10 days, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which isn't even that much time in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, to take yourself off of like the validation tee for 10 days and not be able to reach out to something every time I feel a thing come up. I feel lonely. I feel whatever. I'll reach out. And then like somebody like you, where you have, you know, an inbox right now, you could look at your direct messages and you'd have at least four people saying they think you're awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, that can be like a really slippery slope to be on. Because now all of a sudden I look out and I get that little dopamine. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. I literally observe it every day. Like I'll observe when I'm like, I'll feel my hand. It's like, I won't even know I'm doing it. And I'll feel my hand and be like, you literally just
it's effed up.
Grabbed for your phone for like, I'm bored or what I'm watching isn't enough. Or this is a boring part of the book. I'm like, you're reading right now. Yeah, you don't need to look at your, that's crazy when you acknowledge that.
So if we have the courage to actually like sit with that, which I'm still sorting mine out.
Yeah.
But I know that every time I do, I get the most value. Mm-hmm. You know, 'cause when you have that moment of, okay, I know that there's no value in me reaching for my like EMF machine, you know, blue light machine and all that stuff. And EMF being like electromagnetic frequencies, it's like not good for you, whatever. There's nothing serving me from that, but I'm still reaching out. I'm reaching out for food. I'm reaching out for the booty call of the person that's actually toxic for me, you know, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. If you are able to like, okay, cool. There's the trigger, you know? So I think that from, you know, Byron Katie or a lot of, you know, smart introspective type people, it's like, sit with that and you'll get some serious answers if you're courageous enough to do it. Mm-hmm. But I think really very few people are.
Do you think that requires like, well, I think, okay, I just answered this in my head, but I want to know your answer. Did you see the thought bubble? I saw it. It was chaotic. Do you think that you have to create space for that though? Because so many people, we like just fill it with, we say we're busy or we have work or we go out, or do you almost need to, are you clearing some space for work like that? Do you know what I mean? Like making some space in your day.
Yeah. I think also having things that you actually value in your life, you know, it's being, so with that space, with any, like what I've done a lot is I've replaced one addiction with another thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy for me to be like all high and mighty because I don't like smoke meth or something.
Right.
Or whatever you do with meth.
I actually don't know. I think you do smoke it. Okay.
You smoke it too, probably.
I don't know.
For the still podcast. We'll do some research, come back.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Oh. By the time we get to my podcast, we'll know about meth usage. We'll do a brief.
Leave them hanging.
A brief break. I don't know what I was talking about.
Oh, so like you've replaced one habit with another.
Oh man, I do that all the time.
But it's not meth.
We all do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think within that, it's like, okay, again, it's like, look at the history. All right, I get that. I was, a thing that I'll do is I'll emotionally eat. And I'll eat. It feels good to chew. It's also like a visceral thing, which is kind of like a sexual thing. It's like a part of like your deep visceral. You know, so that's something I'll notice myself. I'm like, oh, I'm chewing. I'm like reaching out for the bag. Wow, I didn't even notice the bag is here. I like subconsciously just like levitated the bag in front of my face. They're like, oh, there it is. I guess I'll have to eat the whole thing.
That happens to me all the time.
God brought it here. I don't want to offend God.
It's true.
And so I'm like, okay, cool. So I'll replace that with something else. So I think that we need to actively replace it with things that are actually like support our lives. You know, so you can get like an exercise habit, or you can get like a walking on the beach habit. You know, I think having anchors are really valuable in your day. You know, so every day, no matter what, I will fill in the blank thing. Like for me, I like exercise every day. It's just a non-negotiable. At some point I'm going to be doing something like that. I'll go to yoga, I'll go to the beach, I'll do acro stuff. But you know, something that's valuable for me is I'll go watch the sunset at Santa Monica Pier at the original Muscle Beach. I'll do that almost every day. You know, and so to me, something like that, it creates like an anchor of like, no matter what, I went and I had this epic sunset.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I think it's really easy for us to each day to kind of just become almost like matted on top of the last, kind of like connective tissue in your body, actually, if you don't move it. Right. I think they're the same thing. So each day they'll become matted on top of each other. And eventually you just feel so thick and stuck and like glued inside of yourself. Because you didn't really address, like, I think journaling is a powerful thing too, to really address, like, what did I do today? You know, like, what would make today great? At the end of the day, like, what happened? What could I have done better? Yeah. To actually like look and say, okay, like where, what is the position of my joints, of my hips, of my, what's the range of motion of my fill in the blank thing? Mm-hmm. You know, if you become accountable with that each day, eventually those layers start to peel back. But mm-hmm. I think having those anchor points are really super, super valuable for me. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
I think I love that because I feel the same way. And that brings me into a question because it's like replacing addictions. We just replace addictions with addictions. Yeah. So, but as important as stillness and being is and observing and, you know, really needing to be still to just really hear answers, I also believe it's equally important to have to move and have those super healthy addictions. Like, do you think yeah. we're meant to always be doing? Like, but what's the balance in that? You know what I'm saying? Because it's easy to be like, oh, doing feels good. Doing is good for me. Doing these right. anchors are great. And all of a sudden you have all of these anchors that can actually be stressful.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this thing. Hopefully it's not too out there for this, but it feels to me like if you don't have enough stillness in your life, then it's easy for, I almost think it was like two balloons. Mm-hmm. There's like the external world.
Yep.
For most of us, it's super powerful, high pressure. It like forms us. You know, so we're just kind of thrown a little woo because we don't have enough of that stillness inside and that like self-worth or that just comfort being in your own skin. Mm-hmm. You know, I think something like meditation is really helpful for that. But there's a lot of different, you know, forms of that. But for most of us, the outside energy is so potent that it just forms us into whatever. But I think that through a practice, for example, like a meditation, it almost starts to like fill that internal balloon so you can start to shape the superficial world around mm-hmm. you. And so you can mm-hmm. see that with certain people that are like visionary, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, like you're like this, you know, where it's like, oh, there's like, she's got a big old world inside of her. Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so the way that we cultivate that is, I think, through all the things that, you know, we're kind of talking about, like having those anchor points and having those stillnesses and that. And then from there, once you have that and you can really visualize, mm-hmm. be a visionary
yeah.
and form the world around you, mm-hmm. now go into action. Mm-hmm. But you were quiet enough to actually hear the whispers of what you really, mm-hmm. what's the best for you. That's that self-actualization thing, I think. Mm-hmm. Like we get these whispers all the time. Right. And I'm only really starting to, and it could be just, you know, whatever, it could be, you know, crazy voices or whatever, but I'm only starting to really hear these whispers, I think, in like the last year, probably. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, I think you should, it could be as simple as like, you need to go to that dinner party. Mm-hmm. You know, okay. You're like, you need to call that person right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and we grow up hearing that, you know, if you hear voices in your head, you're a crazy person. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that we should embrace those voices because as we start to, you start to really like, that's, I think that's like real true guidance. Mm,
I think that's so important for people to hear. I think especially from a male, like that you hear that too, because I think so many women who listen to this always struggle with thinking that they're experiencing this and they want their spouse to experience it or that they don't experience it. Do you know what I'm saying? They don't feel like maybe their spouse believes how they're feeling. Mm. I know that so many women who listen to the podcast are like into the work and they don't feel like their significant other is necessarily like on the path with them. Mm. So I would say, what would you say to a woman who wants her significant other to go on somewhat of a journey like that, where they also want their person to be in touch, like in self-aware, but it's, you know, how do you bring that into their world?
Hmm. I mean, the easiest answer, we'd go do a freaking Vipassana.
Yeah. They're like, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think something like that is because we are so thickly entrenched in like all these little micro addictions
yeah.
that we don't see as being too big of a deal, you know, but if like a person, like if the question was reframed to like, I have a friend or brother or whatever, that's a drug addict. Mm-hmm. Like, what can I do? Should I get him? Maybe like I'll get him chocolate or something, or get him like something that's like healthy replacement or whatever. Right. They're addicted to fucking drugs.
Yeah.
You know, so I think having like a strong pattern interrupt, you know, so maybe we do a trip somewhere far away.
Yeah.
You know, and we just have a strong pattern interrupt.
Yes.
You know, because we do all these different things. And I think it's really valuable. You know, I could list a million different things I think are valuable to like change your home and stuff yeah. like that. But I think we need something bigger than that for most people.
Yeah.
You know, you need a kind big old rock that, whoa, that's some real ripples.
Yeah.
You know, most of us, we have so much static because the lack of quietness or whatever, you know, not or whatever, lack of quietness, I think, like stillness. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have so much static around us that adding a little ripple in, a little pebble to try and augment things, I think usually is like, it just gets consumed by the, by the tidal wave of your previous momentum.
That happens in my life all the time. But I love that you said the pattern interrupt, because that's what happened with, that's what I actually did to Chris.
Okay. Oh, perfect.
Like, we're going on this surf retreat, and it was totally like a ecstatic dancing yoga, howling at the moon.
You
like,
got him. It's like, gonna be lots of naked chicks and waves. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, let's go. And literally the first night he was like, I'm going home. This is not for me. And it was just like the biggest, I can't even tell you, but it was 7 days of like, I mean, massive immersion so far outside of, I was uncomfortable and I'd been to things like that. You know what I mean? And like he was a different person. Mm-hmm. Like from then on, like it didn't go backward. It only went forward.
Yep.
And it was because, you know, you fool them.
Yeah. No. Well, so with that, one of my like tricks is I will flip people upside down. I do like acro yoga, like therapeutic stuff. And you know, other versions of it, but you can flip somebody upside down and you have them hanging literally from your feet or from their hips. And you know, you can start working with their spine and their diaphragm and shoulders and you do body work with them.
Yeah.
But they're in a totally different state, you know, whereas when I'm standing on my feet or I'm laying down, I've done that millions of times.
Yeah.
And so I'm like in control of that. But if I flip you upside down and now all of a sudden you just have to completely trust me because you're so disoriented, you've no idea what's going on. Mm. Now we can start to actually have a conversation.
Yeah.
Because before you had so many layers of BS, of previous stuff, that I'm just like, ugh, like hacking away. I'm just so tired. Mm-hmm. But if you can put yourself in that brand new situation, and even with a partner, you guys can grow together because it's like all of a sudden, I'm sure he with you as well, he saw different sides of you that he never saw before.
Totally.
Because it was different for both of you.
Yeah.
So now, oh, wow, cool. It's like, it's almost, you know, people are all, a lot of like my friends or whatever, like enamored with like polyamory and like open relationships and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I get that. And I think that if you are putting each other into various situations where you're actually exposing different sides of you. Like each person, you know, we all have, I think, you know, kind of like we all have everybody inside of us. Mm-hmm. We all have a little bit of Obama and a little bit of Hitler and a little bit of like, you know, all the personalities. If someone's sensing something in the world, I think that you have that experience in yourself.
Right.
You know, and so if you go into those situations and you see, wow, it's a whole new side of Laurie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, it's almost like I have another partner.
We talk about that all the time, actually, because there's like an old book. It's called Cheating on Your Husband with Your Husband. And it's about getting in like a different situation. So you get a different person. And I love just getting people in different environments and doing different things about how you do acro. I freaking love that because it's a little bit like we forget that you are a different person in a different situation. You don't get to be what you're used to being because it's no longer easy to be that. It's no longer like it can't serve you in that situation at all. You actually have to become someone different to be able to go through this situation.
And it teaches you that you can become someone different on a dime.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a lot of people have a fear of traveling, you know, because like, oh, I'm going to get, you know, I did like it was like a 7 month long motorcycle trip where I went through like Mexico and Central America
Just
like living in a hammock and just randomness.
I mean, awesome for you. Probably not for, no, I'm just kidding.
It was good. No, it was good. Yeah. Well,
bring out a lot in me.
Yeah. Right. But the funny thing with that is every new state or country that I would go into, I'd ask people because I was like scared of stuff because I grew up like an American, you know, white kid that's just like, I'm scared of things. it's just the way it is. We're taught to be afraid of everything.
Yeah.
And so I'd ask people and I was like, oh shit, everybody else is afraid of everything else as well. Like I go into each state. Like in Mexico, for example, and they'd be like, oh, wow, you're going to Jalisco or whatever. I don't know. I'm just making up names. You know, you're going to there. Oh, man, they'll likely kill you. You know? And I'm like, oh, good. Well, I'm going there tomorrow. So I hope it works out. You know, and then I get into that place and they're like, oh, man, you came from there. I'm surprised they didn't kill you. And I'm like, no, they were incredibly friendly, actually. Yeah. They like invited me to their house and we had biscuits. Like, they were like, they were amazing. Every person, amazing. You know?
Yeah.
And like, that's, I'm like, okay, once again, I'm seeing this trend.
Wow.
Every new state, new country, whatever I go into, 99.9% of people are amazing. Mm-hmm. And then there's, with anything, there's like funny situations that you can, if you're sensitive, hopefully you avoid that. But like, the world is kind.
Yeah. I think of that all the time because we live in LA.
Yeah.
And when people are like, oh, don't go there right now, it's terrible, I'm like, you live in LA.
Right.
I'm like, dude, did you forget like that you shit. Are like thriving in LA? You'll be fine.
Yeah. Like,
it's okay.
Yeah. So as you go in there, so you learn from that history, but you need to learn from your history.
Mm.
If your history is just your backyard, mm-hmm. then you'll start to close in on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the human organism, from my perception, is it feeds on adaptation. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you're stuck within the confines of your fence, it's literally like you're tying a noose around yourself.
Yes.
And it just gets tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. And then eventually, you know, whatever, that was your life.
Mm-hmm.
But every time, it's like medicine, like literally medicine. Every time you go out and you realize, wow, people are actually like loving and caring and, you know, have the same vulnerabilities and insecurities that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you do that, it's not only do you realize the world's much more safe, but you realize that, oh shit, I kind of am the world and I feel more safe inside myself. If I feel safe on the globe, then I start to feel safe inside my skin.
I actually have to book trips and like things that really stretch me like that to feel safe. Otherwise, I know that I have the, like, my default is to start to get anxious quickly if I don't continue to get out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's built in for my own like happiness and remembrance that the world is good and people are good, because I have to go get in it in order to remember that. So it's like built into like my, what are you doing this year to expand? How many places are you going? Like, what are you going to do so that you go and get aware of that?
And you can get lost in the whole turmoil of going out in order to go in, you know?
That's true.
Yeah. I'm like getting like way too metaphoric with all this stuff. But I think that's the thing I've realized as well. I've done a bunch of like, for a while, I would leave for a winter. I'd buy like a one-way ticket to fill in the blank place in the world and just kind of explore for 5 months or something.
Right.
And in those time frames, one thing I went through a lot of was like loneliness. That's been like a recurring thing. You know, and with that though, it felt something that I learned was that you're always traveling, you know? So if someone's listening to this and like, okay, cool, that's great. I love the idea of flying to Bangkok, but that's like $1,000 ticket. And then right. I got a job, like I got to pay rent. Like it's like, but the reality is you're like, do you know Joseph Campbell, the whole Hero of 1,000 Faces, all that stuff?
I haven't read the whole thing, but yeah.
It's great.
Okay.
So he talks about the hero's journey.
Yeah.
And we're all on this hero's journey, every one of us. You know, and one of the things he talks about in that is that you start off in what you conceive as like the ordinary world.
Mm-hmm.
And the ordinary world is like the place that you conceive to be normal. But the reality, every ordinary world is totally weird. You know, and that's why we travel, is we go out to see, you know, new things and new cultures and all that. And then you come back and you're like, oh, I kind of get it. You know, when I go back home, probably when you go back home to, where did you say you grew up?
Upper Michigan.
Yeah. When you go back home to Upper Michigan, you have to see it from a completely different vantage
point. Oh my God. It's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every year is different. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like reading a book. Yeah. You really can pretty much read one book if it's a good one, and that could be your book.
Yeah.
Because every time you go out and you explore the world, you come back, you're a different person.
Yes.
You reread that book, you're like, oh, wow, I never even, so much in here I didn't even notice because I didn't have the lens to see it.
Yeah. The Cat in the Hat is mind-blowing. It actually could be.
Cartoon stuffs are awesome because they can wrap in all these messages that like the dense books are, you're just not going to read it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can consolidate something, that's like true genius.
Yeah. If you ever go back and like watch Disney movies and you're like, what?
Oh yeah.
How did I not like, one this thing, is amazing.
Yeah, a high percentage of them were also tripping on psychedelics.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for sure. When you actually go back and you're like, wow, how did they let that in there? That's crazy.
Well, if you're like an adult man and you're like, you know, you're like, your passion has been creating animated fictional worlds, like, of course. Of course.
Of course.
Like,
of course.
Would you expect
anything else? Of course he found psychedelics at 14. Yeah. Of course you did.
Like, what else would you expect from that? He's not an accountant. Jesus.
And thank you for those minds, because they have blessed my life.
Yeah.
They have absolutely blessed my childhood. So.
Well, the musician and the jester and all that, like, they're like so important for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's like, there's a reason that we pay those people a lot of money, because they really are, you know, it allows us to like shine a different light, a different vantage point, to give those people the freedom to look at the world from like just different lenses. Because I'm so focused on the one lens that I have, because I got to pay rent and I got to sort my shit out.
Yeah.
You know, but to have somebody else, it's like, here, let's just culturally, let's invest in you to just be the jester and look at the world from all these different lenses and see how ridiculous all this really is.
Mm-hmm.
Shit is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So
there's
good.
Nothing that's not ridiculous.
Yeah. So you're technically like, whenever we're wanting something new in our life, or we're like, even, that's so interesting. We're always just paying for someone's lenses. Like,
That's what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just sharing lenses. I'm putting your glasses on. You're putting mine on.
I love different lenses. They're so good.
Yeah.
So what's most exciting for you now? Cause I've been like, I feel like I could talk to you for hours, but it's likewise. Got a lot of time has gone by.
Yeah. So I'm doing a book right now, which is exciting, but that's not going to be out for another, like, probably 13 months.
Okay. But real quick, what is it about?
So it's kind of about how our world forms us. Kind of things that we're talking about, you know, how our physical world and also emotional world, cultural, all that stuff literally forms your bones, forms your connective tissue, forms your posture. And then, so that's like a huge part of it. And then also how you can start to integrate basic, simple fundamentals into your day to day to really like be physically empowered.
Mm-hmm.
And all that stems into everything else.
Yeah.
Like your physical body and your emotional body and, you know, all the different, whatever bodies you'd want. I think it's all just one body.
Yeah.
And you know, we dissect it to educate and learn and write books about it. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's all tied together.
Mm.
Like your body doesn't know. When you think of the body as like the two-dimensional maps and bicep brachialis connects to anterior blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Your body's like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm glad this is working out for you. Like you feel like you understand.
Yeah.
But like we're just one body.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So it kind of gets into also like how music affects us and how looking out into the distance and looking up close, like those are ranges of motions in the called the ciliary muscles in your eyes.
Mm.
Like everything that you're doing throughout the day is some form of movement.
Mm.
And you can start to be a bit more empowered.
Mm, that's awesome. I'm excited for that. How's that process going?
Oh, it's cool. So I have a co-writer, which is exciting. And so we have like accountability, which is really important.
Yep.
You know, so that's a huge deal. And the co-writer's awesome. He's like written with like Laird Hamilton and I don't know if you know, cool. Kelly Starrett. He's like, he's in that world. He's like a big deal, like self-care movement, all that stuff. So that's really fun.
Yeah.
And we're doing, launching an online program, the Align Method program, which focuses specifically on unwinding patterns of, you know, being hunched over, looking at phones and offices and staring at screens. Mm-hmm. It's all one pattern of collapse.
Mm.
If you collapse at any level in the body, then that collapse, it spins out into the next, into the next, into the next. And so if we can start to unwind some of those basic patterns, the whole body starts to literally heal itself.
Mm. That's awesome. So it's the new year. What do you want to stop? What's one thing you want to stop in the new year?
Okay. I think something that's big for me is really just honing in focus on everything, you know, so any superfluous nonsense that kind of just like weighs me down. So like social media is a thing.
Mm.
A lot of it's just nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Any type of like unnecessary eating, you know, that's just like, again, it's like, I'm just eating to move my face.
Yeah. I'm so good at that though. Like, look how good my face moves.
Yeah. And as I do that, and then also along with that, something I've been pondering on is having enough compassion for myself to say like, it's okay.
Mm.
It's okay to want to move your face.
Yeah, that one.
You know, it's okay. It's okay to reach out for your phone because you actually maybe want a hug or you actually, you know, something deeper than just like the cell phone stimulation.
Yeah.
It's okay, buddy.
Yeah.
like it's all right.
Because
then we end up doing that double bind thing where now we're all pissed off at ourselves because we're doing the food and doing the cell phone. And now I'm like, ugh, now I'm even more contracted. So I think along with that, compassion.
Yeah.
So it's focus and compassion, I would say.
Oh, I love that. So what do you want to start? Like, is there something that you haven't done yet that you want to begin doing?
Well, for one thing, I see life and such. Like holidays always weird me out because like my days without the holiday, I think are quite great.
Mm-hmm. like, it's a great place to be.
Like throughout the day, like yeah. I love my day. Like I yeah. love doing this with you. I love after this, I'm meeting up with Chris Ryan, who's like fucking amazing, wrote mm-hmm. Sex at Dawn, and we're gonna mm-hmm. talk about other interesting stuff. And then I'm probably gonna go to the beach and pick people up over my head. And then maybe yeah. I'll go to yoga tonight. And then after that, I'll come back and write. I'm like, yes. And then holidays come around. And I'm like, oh God, I need to do something amazing. The new year, you have yeah. to change. So honestly, like I don't care that much and I care regularly. Mm. So something.
I feel like I'm in my brain right now. I'm like, yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And so whatever. I mean, I think just more self-compassion. Just yeah. fucking love myself.
Yeah.
Like no matter all the bullshit, like it's all good. You're just yeah. going through your journey. Mm. You know?
Well, that is a pretty good place to end on.
Oh, good.
And I just want to say I'm so grateful for you. And I, you know what? I want to get really, because your thing was being vulnerable. Yeah. I want to get vulnerable. And I want to tell you that I think I was scared to get to know you because it triggered my, I won't be smart enough for him.
Whoa!
So
I'd have had like the same thing with you.
So I'm having an acknowledgement moment of like how facing like what you're afraid of is actually one of the most beautiful. Like I'm in a really beautiful place of like bliss right now of like number one, learning from myself and having a beautiful new connection. So thank you for that. I'm so grateful for just all that you offer to the world.
Oh man. Exact same. Right back at you.
Oh, well, thank you. And you guys, if you love this episode, make sure you share it with your friends. And until next time, earn your happy. Bye everyone. Thank you guys so much for spending this time with me on the Earn Your Happy podcast. I am so glad that you stopped by. If you could take 1 second to share this episode with someone you think would love it, that would be absolutely amazing. And we would be forever grateful. Also, please leave us a review if you feel so moved by going to iTunes and leaving us an honest thought, an honest comment. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you want to hear more of. It would really help us out on our journey to helping thousands and thousands of people. Until then, don't forget to earn your happy. Thanks again, guys. Bye-bye.